听力考试现在开始。
College English Test, Band 6, Part 3, Listening Comprehension.
Section A, Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said.Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations.Question 11. I'd like to go camping with you this weekend, but I don't have a sleeping bag.
No problem. You can count on me to get one for you. My family has tons of camping gear.
What does the woman mean? Question 12. I know I promised to drive you to the airport next Thursday, but I'm afraid something has come up. They've called a special meeting at work.
No big deal. Karen said she was available as a backup.
What does the woman mean?
Question 13. Have you saved enough money for a trip to Hawaii?
Not even close. My income has put the brakes on my traveling plans.
What does the man mean?
Question 14. I'm starving.Do we still have any pie left from dinner yesterday?
Oh, Julie invited her friends over in the afternoon, and they ate it all.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 15.3 letters of recommendation are required to apply to graduate schools. I was wondering if the one Professor Smith wrote for me last year could still be used.
It's a bit dated. You'd better submit a recent one.
What does the man suggest the woman do?Question 16. I've noticed that you spend a lot of time tending your garden. Would you like to join our gardening club? We meet every other Wednesday.
Oh, thanks for the invitation, but this is how I relax. I'd rather not make it something formal and structured.
What can we infer about the man?
Question 17. I heard the recent sculpture exhibit was kind of disappointing.
That's right. I guess a lot of other people feel the way I do about modern art.
What does the woman mean? Question 18.Bob is running for chairman of the student union. Will you vote for him?
Oh, I can't decide right now because I have to find out more about the other candidates.
What does the woman mean? Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
I don't know what to do. I can't seem to get anyone in the hospital to listen to my complaints, and this outdated equipment is dangerous. Just look at it.
Mm-hmm. Are you trying to say that it presents a health hazard?
Yes, I am. The head technician in the lab tried to persuade the hospital administration to replace it, but they're trying to cut costs.
You're pregnant, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I made an effort to get my supervisor to transfer me to another department, but he urged me not to complain too loudly, because the administration is more likely to replace me than the X-ray equipment. I'm afraid to refuse to work, but I'm more afraid to expose my unborn child to the radiation.
I see what you mean. Well, as your union representative, I have to warn you that it would take quite a while to force management to replace the old machines. An attempt to get you transferred may or may not be successful.
Oh, what am I supposed to do then?
Workers have the legal right to refuse certain unsafe work assignments under two federal laws, the Occupational Safety and Health Act and the National Labor Relations Act. But the requirements of either of the acts may be difficult to meet.
Do you think I have a good case?
If you do lose your job, the union will fight to get it back for you, along with back pay, your lost income. But you'll have to be prepared for a long wait, maybe up to 2 years. Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What does the woman complain about? Question 20. What has the woman asked her supervisor to do? Question 21. What does the man say about the two federal laws? Question 22. What will the union do if the woman loses her job?
Conversation 2. Mr. Green, is it fair to say that negotiation is an art?
Well, I think it's both an art and a science. You can prepare for a negotiation quite scientifically, but the execution of the negotiation has quite a lot to do with one's artistic quality. The scientific part of a negotiation is in determining your strategy. What do you want out of it? What can you give? Then, of course, there are tactics. How do you go about it? Do you take an opening position in the negotiation, which differs from the eventual goal you're heading for? And then, of course, there are the behavioural aspects.
What do you mean by the behavioural aspects?
Well, that's, I think, where the art comes in. In your behaviour, you can either be an actor, you can pretend that you don't like things which you're actually quite pleased about, or you can pretend to like things which you're quite happy to do without. Or you can be the honest type negotiator who's known to his partners in negotiation and always plays everything straight. But the artistic part of negotiation, I think, has to do with responding immediately to cues one gets in the process of negotiation. These can be verbal cues or even body language. This is where the artistic quality comes in.
So really, you see two types of negotiator then. The actor or the honest one?
That's right, and both can work. I would say the honest negotiator can be quite effective in some circumstances. In other circumstances, you need an actor.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 23. When is the scientific approach best embodied in a negotiation according to the man? Question 24. In what way is a negotiator like an actor according to the man? Question 25. What does the man say about the two types of negotiator? Section B, Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. A scientific team is studying the thinking ability of 11.5-month-old children. The test is a simple one. The baby watches a sort of show on a small stage. In Act 1 of the show, a yellow cube is lifted from a blue box and moved across the stage. Then it is returned to the box. This is repeated 6 times. Act 2 is similar, except that the yellow cube is smaller. Baby boys do not react at all to the difference in the size of the cube, but girls immediately become excited. The scientists interpret the girls' excitement as meaning they are trying to understand what they have just seen. They are wondering why Act 2 is odd and how it differs from Act 1. In other words, the little girls are reasoning. This experiment certainly does not definitely prove that girls start to reason before boys, but it provides a clue that scientists would like to study more carefully. Already it is known that bones, muscles, and nerves develop faster in baby girls. Perhaps it is early nerve development that makes some infant girls show more intelligence than infant boys. Scientists have also found that nature seems to give another boost to girls. Baby girls usually talk at an earlier age than boys do. Scientists think that there is a physical reason for this. They believe that the nerve endings in the left side of the brain develop faster in girls than in boys. And it is this side of the brain that strongly influences an individual's ability to use language and remember things.
Questions 26 to 29 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. What is the difference between Act 1 and Act 2 in the test? Question 27. How do the scientists interpret their observation from the experiment? Question 28. What does the speaker say about the experiment? Question 29. According to scientists, what is another advantage given to girls by nature? Passage 2. As superintendent of the city's municipal building, Delia Sedano was responsible for presenting its new security plan to the public. City employees, citizens, and reporters gathered in the hall to hear her describe the plan. After outlining the main points she would cover, she assured the audience that she would be happy to answer questions at the end of her presentation. Delia realized the plan was expensive and potentially controversial, so she was not surprised to see a number of hands go up as soon as she finished speaking. An employee asked, "Will the new system create long lines to get into the building, like the lines at airport security checks?" Delia had anticipated this question and had an answer ready. After repeating the question, she explained that a sufficient number of security guards would be working at peak hours to speed things along. The next question was more confrontational. "Where will the money come from to pay for all of this?" The journalist who asked the question seemed hostile, but Delia was careful not to adopt a defensive tone. She stated that the money would come from the city's general budget. "I know these are tight times," she added, "but everyone agrees on the importance of safeguarding our employees and members of the public who come into the building." Near the end of the 25 minutes she had set, Delia said she would take two more questions. When those were finished, she concluded the session with a brief restatement of how the new system would improve security and peace of mind in the municipal building.
Questions 30 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 30. What is the focus of Delia Sedano's presentation? Question 31. What question had Delia Sedano anticipated? Question 32. What did the speaker think of the question from the journalist? Passage 3. Despite unemployment and the loss of her home, Andrea Clark considers herself a blessed and happy woman. Why the cheerful attitude? Her troubles have brought her closer to her family. Last year, Andrea's husband, Rick, a miner in Nevada, was laid off. Though Andrea kept her job as a school bus driver, she knew they couldn't pay their bills and support their youngest of five children, Zach, age 9, on one income. At first, their church helped out. "But you can't keep that up forever," Andrea says. Then Michael, the eldest of her four adult children, suggested they move in with his family. For almost 3 months, seven Clarks lived under one roof. Andrea, Rick, and Zach stayed in the basement apartment, sharing laundry and a single bathroom with Michael, his wife, and their two children. The change cut their expenditures in half, but the new living arrangement proved too challenging. When Andrea found a job with a school district closer to her mother's home in West Jordan, Utah, the family decided to move on. Packing up again was no picnic. Zach had to switch schools for the second time, and space is even tighter. Andrea says that the moves themselves are exhausting, and Rick is still looking for a job. The recession has certainly come with more problems than Andrea anticipated, but she remains unfailingly optimistic. She is excited to spend more time with her mother. Another plus, rents are lower in Utah than in Nevada, so Andrea thinks they'll be able to save up and move out in less than 6 months.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 33. What do we learn about Andrea's husband? Question 34. Why did Andrea move to live in her eldest son's home? Question 35. What is Andrea's attitude toward the hardships brought by the economic recession? Section C, Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks, numbered from 36 to 43, with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
Mountain climbing is becoming a popular sport, but it is also a potentially dangerous one. People can fall. They may also become ill. One of the most common dangers to climbers is altitude sickness, which can affect even very experienced climbers. Altitude sickness usually begins when a climber goes above 8,000 or 9,000 feet. The higher one climbs, the less oxygen there is in the air. When people don't get enough oxygen, they often begin to gasp for air. They may also feel dizzy and lightheaded. Besides these symptoms of altitude sickness, others such as headache and fatigue may also occur. At heights of over 18,000 feet, people may be climbing in a constant daze. This state of mind can have an adverse effect on their judgment. A few precautions can help most climbers avoid altitude sickness. The first is not to go too high too fast. If you climb to 10,000 feet, stay at that height for a day or two. Your body needs to get used to a high altitude before you climb to an even higher one. Or, if you do climb higher sooner, come back down to a lower height when you sleep. Also, drink plenty of liquids and avoid tobacco and alcohol. When you reach your top height, do light activities rather than sleep too much. You breathe less when you sleep, so you get less oxygen. The most important warning is this. If you have severe symptoms and they don't go away, go down. Don't risk injury or death because of overconfidence or lack of knowledge.
Now the passage will be read again. Mountain climbing is becoming a popular sport, but it is also a potentially dangerous one. People can fall. They may also become ill. One of the most common dangers to climbers is altitude sickness, which can affect even very experienced climbers. Altitude sickness usually begins when a climber goes above 8,000 or 9,000 feet. The higher one climbs, the less oxygen there is in the air. When people don't get enough oxygen, they often begin to gasp for air. They may also feel dizzy and lightheaded. Besides these symptoms of altitude sickness, others, such as headache and fatigue, may also occur. At heights of over 18,000 feet, people may be climbing in a constant daze. This state of mind can have an adverse effect on their judgment. A few precautions can help most climbers avoid altitude sickness. The first is not to go too high too fast. If you climb to 10,000 feet, stay at that height for a day or two. Your body needs to get used to a high altitude before you climb to an even higher one. if you do climb higher sooner, come back down to a lower height when you sleep. Also, drink plenty of liquids and avoid tobacco and alcohol. When you reach your top height, do light activities rather than sleep too much. You breathe less when you sleep, so you get less oxygen. The most important warning is this. If you have severe symptoms and they don't go away, go down. Don't risk injury or death because of overconfidence or lack of knowledge.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. Mountain climbing is becoming a popular sport, but it is also a potentially dangerous one. People can fall. They may also become ill. One of the most common dangers to climbers is altitude sickness, which can affect even very experienced climbers. Altitude sickness usually begins when a climber goes above 8,000 or 9,000 feet. The higher one climbs, the less oxygen there is in the air. When people don't get enough oxygen, they often begin to gasp for air. They may also feel dizzy and lightheaded. Besides these symptoms of altitude sickness, others such as headache and fatigue may also occur. At heights of over 18,000 feet, people may be climbing in a constant daze. This state of mind can have an adverse effect on their judgment. A few precautions can help most climbers avoid altitude sickness. The first is not to go too high too fast. If you climb to 10,000 feet, stay at that height for a day or two. Your body needs to get used to a high altitude before you climb to an even higher one. Or, if you do climb higher sooner, come back down to a lower height when you sleep. Also, drink plenty of liquids and avoid tobacco and alcohol. When you reach your top height, do light activities rather than sleep too much. You breathe less when you sleep, so you get less oxygen. The most important warning is this. If you have severe symptoms and they don't go away, go down. Don't risk injury or death because of overconfidence or lack of knowledge.
This is the end of listening comprehension.
现在听力考试结束。请取下耳机，开始第四部分的答题。